The best example of the way that Australia treats its whistleblowers comes from a man that I can't name, who Australia has come to know as Witness K.
Why does Australia treat whistleblowers so badly? Right now, there's a massive international whistleblower story that the world's media is talking about. It involves Donald Trump and Ukraine, and it's launched an impeachment inquiry.
Could have a critical bearing on the future of Donald Trump's presidency.
The whistleblower whose story helped to set off this impeachment inquiry is getting some backup.
Here in Australia, there's also a big ongoing international whistleblower story, but hardly anyone is talking about it. I'm Gabrielle Jackson. This is The Full Story. It all starts in 2004, during negotiations over oil and gas reserves in the Timor Sea. On one side is Australia and the interests of big multinational corporations led by Woodside Petroleum. On the other side is Timor-Leste, at the time the poorest country in Asia and one of Australia's closest allies.
So a team from ASIS, which is Australia's foreign spy agency,
Christopher North is Guardian Australia's transparency reporter.
Were instructed by the then Howard government, which had its foreign minister as Alexander Downer at the time, to effectively bug the East Timor government offices during the negotiations. And Witness K, at the time, was part of that ASIS team. They were instructed to do this because it would give them access to what the negotiating team for East Timor were saying behind the scenes. It's a really, really underhanded tactic because it gives the government, the Australian government, access to East Timor's bottom line. So the Australian government goes into the negotiations knowing how low it can drive East Timor.
But just in terms of the bugging, we're talking like old-fashioned, go into the office and put some listening devices in, are we?
Right, yeah, this is really sort of old-school John le Carré type bugging operations.
Wow.
You know, where we've got ASIS agents putting listening devices in various parts of the offices. East Timor had no idea about any of this, obviously. It wouldn't have been a particularly good operation if they had. But the negotiations finished. The initial treaty that came out of that effectively gave the two countries a 50-50 split of these resources. So it was a relatively good deal for Australia. You know, it gave East Timor a decent share of the oil and resources in the sea, but it was nowhere near what they needed to lift themselves out of poverty and really jumpstart their economy.
So were they happy with that deal?
It depends on who you talk to, but the negotiators from the time say that they weren't happy.
Is this normal behaviour among friendly nations, Chris?
Well, look, I mean, everybody that I've talked to says absolutely not. So to do this to a friendly nation, an ally, in such an underhanded way, really the only purpose of it was to gain a commercial advantage.
At what point did Witness K feel like there was something not quite right about these negotiations?
So from what I know about Witness K as a person, I know that he's a deeply patriotic man. He loves his country. He served it for a long time in a really demanding role. The story goes that he was uncomfortable at the time, and he saw it as really critical intelligence resources being diverted away from serious issues to an operation where the primary motivation is a commercial one, that is getting the most profit that we possibly can from an oil and gas reserve, really rubbed Witness K up the wrong way. And so what we saw in 2008 was Alexander Downer taking a consulting role with Woodside, which of course was one of those companies looking to exploit the Timor Sea.
So the foreign minister involved in the negotiations over the Timor Sea then goes to work for one of the multinationals he was bargaining for,
right,
or negotiating on behalf of.
Yeah, right. So We should point out at this point that there's nothing illegal about that. He hasn't broken any rules, and we don't know the exact circumstances of his role with Woodside. But what we know is...
There's also credible rumours of disquiet within ASIS over the diversion of scarce resource intelligence assets, away from the war on terror and towards East Timor.
This has triggered something. It's triggered some movement on behalf of Witness K. So Rex Patrick, crossbench senator with Centre Alliance, told Parliament...
Aware of Mr Downer's consultancy work for Woodside...
Effectively, when Witness K learned of Downer's new role with Woodside, he decided it was time to speak out.
Right, so what did he do?
Witness K complained to the Inspector General of Intelligence and Security about the East Timor operation.
So he did what intelligence operatives are told to do when they witness something that they believe to be misconduct, and that is that he went to the Inspector General of Intelligence and Security. So the IGIS, which is basically the watchdog that oversees all of Australia's intelligence services. He voiced his concerns in a confidential way. He got approval to go and talk to a lawyer who had been vetted by the intelligence agencies and was approved to deal with this kind of stuff.
And obviously, who's that lawyer?
You can appreciate how sensitive it is. So that lawyer was a guy by the name of Bernard Cleary. So Bernard Cleary is incredibly well known where I grew up in Canberra because he used to be the ACT's Attorney General, very intelligent man. Not many people knew, in fact, probably nobody knew that he was also a lawyer for intelligence services and intelligence agents at the same time. But there you go.
He's an approved lawyer, former Attorney General, very experienced barrister, and Witness K goes to see him after getting that approved through the proper channels.
Right.
What happens then?
So I can't tell you everything that's happened in that time period because it's currently before the court, but but what I can tell you and what we know from what has been said in Parliament by Rex Patrick is that
after 2.5 years of research, Mr. Cleary determined that the espionage operation in East Timor was unlawful and may also have been an offence under Section 334 of the Criminal Code of the ACT.
So he...
The events that followed are well known.
Helps the East Timorese government build a case against Australia in the international courts.
The East Timorese took Australia to the Permanent Court of Arbitration.
The Hague. And what he's effectively alleging is that Australia, by bugging East Timor during those negotiations, has rendered the entire treaty void. So the agreement is off, you know, the deal's off, Australia played unfair.
Right. So what happened then? How did Australia react to that?
So Australia reacted quite badly. This case started to attract a bit of press, so we started seeing stories about this dispute between East Timor and Australia pop up in outlets like The Australian and the ABC. And then in 2013 now, we're talking, Bernard Cleary had just left Canberra to travel to The Hague, and one of his law clerks was sitting by herself at his home practice in a Canberra suburb of Deakin, and she hears a knock on the door and opens it to find more than 10 ASIS, ASIO and AFP agents standing out the front with a warrant that had been heavily redacted, so she couldn't even tell why they were there and what they were raiding her for. Now, I've talked to her about this a lot, and she just always says that she remembers seeing these agents sitting on the floor, rifling through Bernard Cleary's documents, taking anything that they wanted. And she just remembers thinking that this is cheating. You know, you've got two parties who are before the court, Bernard Cleary representing East Timor and Australia. And one of those parties has just marched in to the offices of its opponent and started taking whatever documents it wants.
And she can't even see the basis for it because most of the warrants blacked out.
She has no idea. She continually asked them why they were there, and all they would say was national security, just national security. We know those two words are used to justify a lot of encroachments on civil liberties and transparency in this country. So Yes.
And what happened to Witness K? Was he raided too?
He did. He was raided at the same time as Bernard Cleary, so they were simultaneous raids. Not only that, he had his passport seized, which is truly outrageous because he was being called as a witness in The Hague to give evidence.
Right. So did he make it?
No, he could never leave the country.
Does The Hague case happen?
It does. It does. So eventually, this is over quite a long time, but eventually they... Timor Leste finds a way to reach an agreement with Australia, so it withdraws its case before The Hague, and they negotiate a new treaty, which is incredibly more generous to East Timor. They get a way fairer deal than they would have got under that original 50-50 split. And this new deal was signed in March 2018.
So the bugging happens in 2004 and then the first deal gets signed in 2006. In 2008, it blows up that Australia has conducted basically an illegal spying operation, and then that goes to The Hague. And that's resolved early last year. So what happens now to Cleary and Witness K?
Well, here's the thing. In Timor-Leste, Bernard Cleary and Witness K are really regarded as heroes for what they've done. They have essentially helped East Timor get a vastly better deal than it did in the first instance. I mean, the former president.
So Witness K couldn't agree with it. How can we spy on this little impoverished country?
Jose Ramos-Horta wants them to be awarded the country's highest honour.
The two did not commit an act of treason in a situation of war between Australia and China, Australia and North Korea. It was a very case of moral conscience.
You know, there's people who wear shirts and hang banners in the street praising these guys, and back here in Australia, the difference couldn't be more stark.
So what did the Australian government do? Did they say sorry? Did they offer an apology? No.
The major parties have been pretty much completely silent on this case. So it's been left up to individuals like David Shoebridge to speak out.
They commenced criminal prosecutions against the whistleblower for pointing out their illegal activity. And then they commenced criminal prosecutions against the lawyer for daring tell the truth about the appalling behaviour of our government.
The government has effectively waited 15 years to wrap up its negotiations over this deal and then prosecute these two guys.
A high-profile lawyer and a former spy face up to 2 years jail accused of conspiring to release...
The law demanded the Attorney-General approve the charges, which the Commonwealth once prosecuted in the utmost secrecy.
So now they've been accused through the courts of disclosing protected intelligence information, including to the media.
And the prosecutor will attempt to have the court hearings kept secret, citing the sensitivity of national security.
And those cases are continuing to wind their way through the courts. Bernard Cleary is fighting the charges.
What happens to them if they're found guilty?
Well, they both face jail time. They'll both face criminal conviction. You know, for Bernard Cleary, who's a barrister, that means his, you know, his legal work is done. I mean,
he won't be able to practice as a lawyer anymore.
I think since this has happened, he hasn't been able to practice in any way. And obviously, Witness K, who was a long-term intelligence agent, obviously that's gone. No chance of that anymore. And we've also heard that he's been under incredible stress and has become quite ill under the weight of these prosecutions.
Right. And even though Witness K went to an approved lawyer, he's still being charged with that crime.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
How does that happen?
Yeah, look, Witness K did everything according to the book. So intelligence agents, if they see injustice or misconduct, they're told to raise the matter through the intelligence watchdog, the IGIS. He did that. So as far as Witness K is concerned, there's not a lot more he could have done to sort of comply with these really tough requirements for what whistleblowers are supposed to do within the intelligence services. And it just shows you how really weak and flawed those laws are.
So what has the reaction been towards the Australian government and their behaviour in this issue?
Well, Nothing really has happened at all to those who are responsible for ordering this operation.
Nothing.
Nothing at all, no. And, I mean, just shows you what being in power is good for. I mean, you know, the people who blow the whistle and do the right thing, in this case, have their lives destroyed. The people who engaged in the unlawful conduct get off relatively scot-free.
So this is a pretty extraordinary case. Is this typical of how whistleblowers are treated in Australia, Chris, or is this a bit of an outlier?
It's typical in the sense that the government does go after whistleblowers. We've seen that with a range of cases in the last couple of years. You know, we've seen the government go after the tax office whistleblower, Richard Boyle, who spoke out to ABC's Four Corners about aggressive sort of tax practices by the tax office. You know, we've seen it with David McBride, who was a defence lawyer who leaked a bunch of documents about the Afghanistan war. I think there is a real trend here, and it is extremely concerning.
Mm. Why is the government pursuing these two men so hard?
What Witness K and Bernard Cleary did really angered some very powerful forces in this country. It not only angered the intelligence services, which saw it as a betrayal, but it also angered the government, because it was incredibly embarrassing for the Australian government to be doing this to an ally and an impoverished nation. But it also really, really angered the companies, who didn't come out of it looking particularly well either. I mean, I think, you know, that just the embarrassment and the anger that they generated by doing what they did, I think explains a lot of the vindictiveness in the way the Australian government has pursued this. It's shown an extraordinarily long memory to prosecute two guys for blowing the whistle over an operation 15 years ago. And I think that can only be explained by, you know, the Australian government wanting to teach whistleblowers a lesson, to say, if anyone else ever does this from the intelligence services, this is the way that it's going to be treated. And I think they've done that very deliberately.
So we see a clear pattern of whistleblowers being silenced in this country. Has it affected your reporting at all?
Yeah, look, there has been a real noticeable change in the sort of demeanour of the whistleblowers that I have worked with recently in the past few months. You know, I've had people pull out of stories. I've had people expressing serious fear that they're going to be prosecuted or chased through the courts.
Okay, so what do you think needs to change so that we, the public, can find out when there is government wrongdoing happening?
The experts in this space are pretty universal on this, that Australia's whistleblower laws as they currently stand are really critically flawed. They make it really, really difficult for public sector whistleblowers, so people within government, to speak out about misconduct and corruption in a public way. What they do is they sort of funnel whistleblowers internally, so they encourage whistleblowers to go within their department or their agency and speak out about concerns, but they make it incredibly hard to speak out publicly. So I think fundamentally we need to conduct a really thorough look at the whistleblower protections in Australia, make it simpler and easier for people to speak out publicly, and to really just rethink the value of whistleblowers in our society. I mean, it's, just think about it from a personal point of view. If you saw something at work that you knew was wrong, that you knew was probably unlawful, would you destroy your life? Would you risk everything, you know, your family, your job, your employment prospects? Why would you take that chance? You know, and without proper whistleblower protections, that's really the choice that people are left with.
In the wake of moves by successive federal governments to penalise whistleblowing and in some cases criminalise journalism, Guardian Australia has joined the Right to Know campaign. Right to Know is a coalition of Australia's leading media organisations and industry groups, making the Australian public aware of the growing threat to their ability and their fundamental right to know information that impacts their lives. Visit yourrighttoknow.com.au to find out more. Special thanks to Christopher Norse for today's story. You can read more of Chris's reporting on government transparency at theguardian.com. That's it for today. If you liked this episode, don't forget to subscribe to the show. Just search for Full Story wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what you hear so far, don't be shy to share Full Story with a friend or family member. This episode was produced by Ellen Leibeater and Laura Murphy-Oates and executive produced by Miles Martignoni. Laura Murphy-Oates will be back on Friday.